The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Diane Edelman for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Reader's Digest. For the next half hour, I will be reading articles to you from the July 2025 issue and then from the January 2025 issue. Our first article, Without You, I Wouldn't Be Alive Anymore. A Georgia grandmother and a young German man are forever connected thanks to a life-saving donation. By Matt Kemper from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The handwritten letter arrived at Dale Tingle's home in Watkinville, Georgia, after months of her praying for the survival of a person she'd never met. She had been told little about the person, only that the individual was 20 years old and dying of leukemia. A scouring of the whole world had turned up Tingle as the only known person in possession of a possible lifeline, a perfect match of stem cells. So she had donated some and waited. She and her husband, friends, and family prayed to God to nourish and heal the stranger, wherever and whoever the person was. And because they didn't know the person's name, she chose one, Rocky, the same as the fighter who, in the movies, wouldn't give up, no matter the odds. Then the letter arrived, festooned with glitter. It was written in English, not the writer's native language. No identity was disclosed due to strict rules governing contact between a donor and recipient in the first 2 years. I am 20 years old. I don't know whether you know me. By now, you have become one of the most important people in my life. Without you, I wouldn't be alive anymore. I had already given up hope. And now I am wondering, what do you tell someone who has saved your life? It read. The letter went on. It's an amazing feeling to know that there is someone on the other side of the world who I am connected to so deeply, although I have never met you before. If it's okay, I am going to see you as soon as possible. That eventual meeting was the beginning of an enduring bond between Kevin Kruger, a 6-foot-something German from a small town 4,500 miles away, and Tingle, a 5-foot-2 grandmother living near Athens, Georgia. Kruger has been to the United States 3 times now, most recently in August 2024. In that time, he has never visited New York City or Washington, D.C., or Hollywood or the Grand Canyon. He likes sticking closer to what feels almost like home. All he really wants to do on his 10-day visits is spend time with Tingle and her family, chatting on porches, playing in the creek behind the house with Tingle's grandchildren, attending church with the family, listening to crickets in the woods. Now 33, cancer-free, and working as a state government aide in northern Germany, Kruger can still feel the influence of his near death. I think that the leukemia had a big impact on my personality, he says. I just enjoy the little moments. Grateful is a word he uses a lot. Kruger was 19 when doctors told him his recent nosebleed and the pain in his leg bones were from leukemia, a cancer he had never heard of. The treatment was aggressive, with round after round of chemotherapy. Bedridden in a hospital in Hamburg, his weight dropped from 176 pounds to 88. His mother, who worked and cared for his 2 younger sisters, visited him in the hospital daily. Then she'd go to a hospice center to see her husband, Kruger's father, who was dying of brain cancer. To try to lift his mother's spirits, Kruger smiled and told jokes often, one of his sisters remembers. But when it came to his illness, she says, he fought like a lion. Still, the cancer wouldn't leave him. A doctor told him his only remaining option was a stem cell transplant. Stem cells can be used to take on a variety of dangerous diseases, from sickle cell disease to blood cancers. In the case of cancer, medical teams blast a patient's body with especially powerful chemotherapy in the hopes of killing both the cancer and the patient's own remaining stem cells. Then they inject donated stem cells in an attempt to restart the person's system for creating new blood cells. About 70% of the time, patients can't find a good stem cell match from someone in their family. Kruger asked about his chances for survival. He was told 50-50, assuming they could find someone who was a match. His family members got tested. None matched. Two stem cell and bone marrow registry events were held near his hometown, attended by a total of about 3,000 people. Still, no luck. At least not for him. 20 people who were tested were later found to be compatible donors for other people. Then his doctor told him somebody had turned up in the United States who might be a match for him. Tingle was working as a dental hygienist at the time and was preparing to run the Boston Marathon. She was 54 years old, well beyond what is often considered the prime age for stem cell donation. Less than a year and a half earlier, she'd had the inside of her cheek swabbed at a stem cell bone marrow registry event organized to help a local 3-year-old boy battling a rare form of leukemia. She wasn't a match for the boy, but she was notified just before Christmas in 2010 that she appeared to be a match for someone else with leukemia in urgent need of her stem cells to stay alive. Would she donate? Tingle says she never considered not donating. Initially, she thought that she might involve doctors that might involve doctors drilling into her hip bone to extract bone marrow that had stem cells. She later learned she would have a different procedure that was much less invasive. Either way, she was up for it. There are not many opportunities in life to know that you have truly saved someone's life, Tingle says. She calls it one of the greatest privileges of her life. She had her blood tested and traveled to the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida, to have a physical to ensure she was healthy enough. Each step of the way, she could have dropped out. Her stem cell donation took place in 2 sessions, each several hours long over 2 days. A needle was put in one arm, and her blood traveled through a tube into a machine that stripped out stem cells and returned the blood to her via a tube to her other arm. The only side effect she recalls, a short-term migraine. All her costs, from medical to transportation and lodging, were covered. Months later, Tingle began receiving letters from Kruger and his family in Germany. They still didn't know each other's names. So one letter from Kruger's mom began this way. Dear rescuer of my son. Kruger and Tingle met for the first time in 2019. She recalls the first moments she and her husband, Steve Tingle, a retired auto repair shop owner, saw Kruger in the Atlanta airport. It was so emotional, she says. She wept, and he gave her some tight hugs. It was an awesome thing, the realness of it. It had been such a long journey. Recounting this on her front porch, she gives Kruger another hug and leans her head against him. Tingle is certain it wasn't just luck that led her to being able to save a stranger. In God's providence, I was there, having been formed in my mother's womb with just what was needed genetically to be the one, she says. She marvels at the connections that brought her and Kruger together, and she said she hopes others take the same step she did to register in case their stem cells can help save someone else. Last year, Tingle thought it would be nice to bring Kruger to see the boy who had been the reason she initially got on a stem cell registry. She didn't know the boy or his family, but a friend of hers did. When the friend informed Tingle that no match had been found, she was heartbroken. She incorrectly assumed that the boy had died. He had not. His parents said he later received a donation of stem cells harvested from the cord blood found in the placenta and umbilical cord of a mother giving birth. Molly and Josh Billings say their son now has no sign of cancer and recently graduated from high school. The family has moved to California, but they say they'd like to meet Tingle and Kruger. The Billingses are awed by the links among strangers. As their son grew up, he often loved to play in a creek beside his best friend's house in Watkinville. They learned it is the same creek Kruger revels playing in with Tingle's grandkids. "Full circle," Josh Billings says. "It feels like we are all connected. For all the differences we think we have with each other, we have something similar." One woman, living thousands of miles away from Kruger, turned out to be his nearly perfect stem cell match. He plans to keep returning to Georgia to see her and her family. This year, he brought along his girlfriend and one of his sisters. The Tingles hope to visit Germany and meet Kruger's mom and other family members. He's grateful for having a longer life and for getting a treasure beyond stem cells. "It is the biggest gift in my life to know these people," Kruger says. That was "Without You, I Wouldn't Be Alive Anymore" by Matt Kemper. And now our second article. How risky are those holiday cocktails, really? The latest recommendations about drinking and your health by Beth Winehouse. 'Tis the season to be jolly, and for many of us, that may mean indulging in a glass of eggnog at festive cocktail parties, a glass of wine at celebratory dinners, a flute of champagne to ring in the new year. Alcohol consumption in the United States rose during the pandemic, especially among women. But drinking has since returned to pre-pandemic levels, and in the last few years, there's been another trend happening, an increase in people who are interested in cutting down or cutting out alcohol completely. More and more people are choosing to toast with a mocktail or a glass of club soda, as new studies show that alcohol's effects on the body may be even more harmful than previously thought. People are starting to recognize the hazards of drinking and question their own alcohol use. We're wondering, do we need alcohol in our lives? Says Rayam Atiya, MD, an addiction specialist at Kaiser Permanente Los Angeles Medical Center. Read on for the latest research on how alcohol affects your health and for ways to cut back on your drinking if you decide that's a good idea. What does booze do in the body? Most people are aware that alcohol affects the brain, can damage the liver, and can affect a pregnant woman's developing baby. But that's not all the havoc it can wreak. Because alcohol is water-soluble and disseminates through the entire body, there's not a single organ that's not affected by heavy alcohol use, says Dr. Atiya. According to the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, NIAAA, part of the National Institutes of Health, here are just some of the negative health effects drinking has on your body. Brain. Alcohol affects the brain's communication pathways, which can change mood and behavior, affect coordination, and make it harder to think clearly. Heart. Alcohol can raise blood pressure, cause arrhythmias, irregular heartbeat, and cardiomyopathy, a stretching or drooping of the heart muscle, and raise the risk of stroke. Liver. Alcohol can lead to liver diseases such as steatosis, fatty liver, alcoholic hepatitis, fibrosis, scar tissue that's formed when the liver tries to repair damaged tissue, and cirrhosis, permanent damage from scar tissue. Says Dr. Atiya, the liver is probably more affected because the way we ingest alcohol is through the gastrointestinal system. So it makes sense that the first organs to be affected are the organs of this system, the esophagus, stomach, liver. Pancreas. Alcohol use can make the organ produce toxins that cause pancreatitis, a dangerous inflammation that impairs the ability of the pancreas to make the substances necessary for proper digestion. Immune system. Drinking too much can weaken the immune system, making the body more susceptible to disease. In fact, according to the NIAAA, drinking a lot on a single occasion slows your body's ability to ward off infections, even up to 24 hours after getting drunk. Cancer. Drinking alcohol regularly over time can raise the risk of several types of cancer, including head and neck cancer, esophageal cancer, liver cancer, breast cancer, and colorectal cancer. The International Agency for Research on Cancer has labeled alcohol a Group 1 carcinogen, like asbestos, radiation, and tobacco. In addition, drinking has been linked to greater risks of developing osteoporosis and dementia. And recent research is showing that in addition to harming a developing fetus, alcohol use can inhibit fertility for both men and women, making it more difficult to get pregnant in the first place. These detrimental effects are just a sampling of how alcohol can harm the body. In fact, alcohol is known to contribute to 200-plus health conditions. One thing that most people don't connect with alcohol is mental health, says Dr. Attia. A lot of times people use alcohol to self-medicate depression and anxiety symptoms. In the short term, it may appear that alcohol is helping. In the long term, it's worsening the problem. Alcohol can also counteract the effect of medications designed to treat anxiety and depression, she adds. But wait, haven't you read that alcohol, especially red wine, has some positive health benefits? There's a polyphenol, a type of plant compound, called resveratrol in red wine that is beneficial, says Dr. Attia. It decreases inflammation in the epithelial cells that line the blood vessels. It penetrates the blood-brain barrier and has protective effects. It reduces platelet aggregation and can prevent the formation of blood clots. But before you grab that bottle of Cabernet, consider this. These polyphenols can be found in other substances, like grapes, raspberries, and peanuts, or by taking supplements, says Dr. Attia. So even if there is a benefit to red wine, you don't need to drink red wine to get this benefit. Eat the grapes instead. Is there a safe level of drinking? Considering that alcohol is a risk factor for so many serious health problems, is any amount considered safe? According to the Dietary Guidelines for Americans 2020 through 2025 from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, adults can drink in moderation by limiting intake to a maximum of 2 drinks for men and 1 drink for women on days when alcohol is consumed. Overall, the guidelines continue, drinking less is better for health than drinking more. Other organizations go further. The American Cancer Society recommends that for cancer prevention, it's best not to drink alcohol. The World Health Organization says that when it comes to alcohol consumption, there is no safe amount that does not affect health. Dr. Attia agrees. Any drinking is hazardous to the body. There is no safe amount of drinking. Are you sober curious? In 2018, author Ruby Warrington coined the term sober curious to encourage people to examine their drinking habits in the context of the rest of their lifestyle. Why, she asks in her 2018 book, Sober Curious, The Blissful Sleep, Greater Focus, Limitless Presence, and Deep Connection Awaiting Us All on the Other Side of Alcohol, are so many people eating healthy, exercising, meditating, and taking other steps to be healthy, but not really looking at or seeing how their alcohol drinking affects them? The purpose of adopting a sober, curious lifestyle is to gain a deeper understanding of one's drinking habits, motivations, and how alcohol affects well-being, explains Carrie Benson, a registered dietitian and the co-creator of the Sober Curious Dietitians website. That's thesoberdietitians.com. How this awareness shapes future choices will differ from person to person. Being sober curious doesn't necessarily mean complete abstinence from alcohol, she says. But some people may find, after examining their habits and experimenting with not drinking, that alcohol no longer fits in their lives. Before becoming a registered dietitian, Benson worked in a neuroscience lab researching the impacts of alcohol on brain development. During the early months of the pandemic, when alcohol consumption was rising in the United States and abroad, Benson and her sober curious dietitian's partner, Diana Lucalzi, began questioning their own relationships with alcohol. They immersed themselves in scientific literature on alcohol's health effects and engaged with the sober community. They became aware of how society had normalized drinking. And in the summer of 2020, they decided to embark on their own alcohol-free challenge. We noticed improvements in our skin, sleep, energy levels, and finances, says Benson. Now they hope to encourage more people to examine their drinking habits and to reap the psychological and physical benefits of abstaining. Benson's and Lucalzi's experience of feeling healthier once they stop drinking is typical. Since alcohol affects nearly every part of your body, you can expect to feel the difference soon after you stop or cut down. The first thing that improves is sleep, says Dr. Atiyah. Most people who drink complain of insomnia. She adds that people will notice they have more energy and feel less anxious. Blood pressure improves. Cholesterol levels improve. That can happen within 30 days. And because you improve blood pressure and cholesterol, you also lower your risk of cardiovascular disease, meaning heart attack and stroke, she says. People also notice healthy weight loss, and they notice improvements in their energy and mood. What are some tips for cutting back or cutting out drinking? December can be a difficult time of year to suddenly stop drinking alcohol. In fact, overindulging over the holidays is one reason for the Dry January movement, which encourages people to give up alcohol for the entire month. Popular alcohol-free challenges like Dry January and Sober October give people a structured opportunity to take a break from drinking, says Benson. These initiatives not only help to destigmatize abstaining from alcohol, but also provide a manageable way for individuals to examine their drinking habits. But you don't have to wait until January or October to question or change your drinking habits. A great place to start, says Benson, is by practicing mindful drinking. Observe how alcohol makes you feel as you drink it, as well as the next day, both physically and emotionally, she advises. Think about why you're drinking. Because you feel that you should in a social context? Out of habit? To relax or as a reward? Also, think about the drinks you consume. Do you even like the taste? Based on my own sober curious journey, my top recommendation for cutting back on alcohol is to keep substitutes readily available, she says. These could include non-alcoholic beer or sparkling wine, creative mocktails, flavored seltzer water, or kombucha. Try serving them in elegant glassware, she suggests. Viewing this transition as an opportunity to explore new flavors rather than giving something up can be empowering, she says. Other tips? Don't keep alcohol in your home so you won't be tempted. If there's a friend or family member you trust, especially someone who lives with you, share your plan and use this person for support. Consider setting specific guidelines and goals for yourself. For instance, you could establish a monthly budget for alcohol expenses or a maximum number of drinks you will consume on an occasion, says Benson. At social events, if you aren't ready to stick to sparkling water, try alternating alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks or diluting your drinks so they only contain half as much alcohol. For instance, switch from wine to wine spritzers. Benson also recommends making an effort to practice self-care, like journaling, connecting with friends, taking walks, indulging in baths, or practicing yoga, all of which are better, healthier ways to manage stress than drinking. Dr. Atiyah recommends that people talk to their primary care doctor about how much they drink. Then the recommendations they get for less hazardous drinking levels or giving up alcohol completely can be tailored to their age, medical condition, medications, etc. Many people, she adds, are not aware that there are medications to help people reduce their drinking. As a generalization, though, it's a good idea to cut down your total consumption by about 20% every week, she says. That's a way to cut down slowly without any major complications. Dr. Atiya often negotiates with her patients, urging them to agree to stop drinking for 30 days or 90 days. I tell them it's easily reversible if they don't like it, she says. And then, once they do a period of complete sobriety, they get an understanding that life can go on without drinking, and that it's not as important in their lives as they first thought it was. That was How Risky Are Those Holiday Cocktails Really? By Beth Winehouse. And now a very short piece, Gripper the Class Turtle, by Ankeny Aya. In 1993, a student at my wife's elementary school brought in a box turtle he'd found in the wild. My wife agreed to keep Gripper as a pet for her second grade class. The classroom was already decorated like a park, with a bench, artificial trees, and a pond with a working fountain, so a turtle fit right in. Gripper got her name because she'd grip her students' hands when they picked her up and crane her neck out instead of retreating into her shell. Taking care of Gripper's enclosure became the most coveted classroom job. After decades of teaching, my wife retired. Gripper is a house turtle now, spending her days scuttling around our deck, scratching at doors she'd like us to open, and pushing around her food dish when she's hungry. Gripper is the first thing former students ask about when my wife runs into them. We don't know how old she is, but box turtles can live to 100. So we've informed our daughter that she'll inherit our turtle if we pass before Gripper does. That was Gripper the Class Turtle by Ankeny Aya. We've run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Diane Edelman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Reader's Digest is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.